housekeeping. It's a 2.5 hour session. We'll have a break in between for 5 minutes, but at any time you want to take a bathroom break, want to drink water, please feel free. And anything else? No, right? Mm-hmm. Please, cell phones off, please. It distracts. Okay, so we have passed, you know, everyone has a sheet of paper in front of you. Oh, it's okay. I think the Prabhu distributed it. So it is a JAPA evaluation form. Take 10 minutes. It's what? 10:50 till 11 o'clock. Take 10 minutes to go through the questions and answer it as honestly as you can. You will not be asked to share this with the group or with anybody. This is for your own personal evaluation. So try to answer as honestly as you can. You have 10 minutes. Yes. Anybody wants pen? Okay. My purse has answer.
And it is on both the sides. And for the last item, the way you're going to answer is not at all, a little, sufficiently, or fully. How much satisfied are you feeling with your performance? There's three columns, right? There's the answer, which can be yes or no mostly, or just like straight answer. And am I improving, and am I feeling satisfied with my performance? So you can take 10 minutes. Any questions? It's pretty simple. All right, everyone done? Yes. So how many of you, can I have a show of hands? How many of you are fully satisfied with everything? How many of you are sufficiently satisfied with the progress you're making? Very nice. There are a few sufficiently satisfied. Very nice. And how many of you, not at all? Okay, good. So hopefully you'll find something useful from this session. So Himangi Mataji was talking about, you know, this being a celebration of the journey of our relationship, and also it's a celebration of our journey of our relationship with the Holy Name, really. Because in one sense, that is what has transformed our relationship, I would say, our journey with the Holy Name, our journey with Srimad Bhagavatam, our journey with our relationship with our spiritual master. That's what really, just going deeper within each of our own hearts and taking responsibility for our own stuff, that has what really transformed the relationship, not trying to change something outside. So when I first planned on this session, I was just planning to do meditation on lotus feet as one possible tool or technique, you can call it, to help chanting. And this is something that I've used. This was an inspiration for me that came from study of first and second cantos, particularly third canto too, but more the inspiration started when I was studying first and second canto, because the first and second cantos are basically the lotus feet of Krishna. So it is a very nice meditation. So I want to share a few verses, first of all, in glorification of the lotus feet of Krishna. Here's a nice prayer by Lord Brahma, and he's saying, "My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years." So really, in one sense, devotional service is really all about attaining the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, and devotees really consider the lotus feet of Krishna to be their only shelter or their only asset. So our whole purpose is actually to come to that point of shelter. So here in the slide you're seeing, there was a conversation, as we all know, between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy at one time on the bank of Godavari. And he asked many, many questions, including the question about the goal of life, which we often speak about in this conversation. But one of the questions he asks is, Dheya madhe jivera kartavya kona dhyana. So Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, out of many types of meditation, which is required for all living entities? And Ramananda Roy says, Radha Krishna Pradambuja Dhyana Pradana, that the chief duty of every living entity is to meditate upon the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. And practically all of the Vedic scriptures, they're, you know, glorifying about taking the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord is so glorious that even the person who takes that shelter of the lotus feet, he becomes very glorious. So here's a verse from the first canto speaking about that. O Suta Goswami, or O Suta, these great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. And here I have actually a quote, part of the purport from the fourth canto, where Prabhupada is basically speaking about the first and second cantos being the lotus feet of the Lord. And if a devotee really wants to see the transcendental form of the Lord, he begins with meditation on the Lord's lotus feet. And we do that when we take darshan of the deities. Each day we go from the lotus feet and go up. So we can see the face because it's very attractive when you open the curtains. Can see the face, you know, when they're just open. But then, as a meditation, it's always recommended that you go from the lotus feet and up. And similarly, with the Bhagavatam, I always used to wonder, you know, what does it really mean, you know, to meditate on the lotus feet? What does it really mean to take shelter of the lotus feet? Because we keep hearing about it, But how to actually do it, right? Here's also another verse from by the gopis. Oops, they're so small here, I can't see. The gopis spoke thus, Dear Lord, whose navel is just like a lotus flower, your lotus feet are the only shelter for those who have fallen into the deep well of material existence. Your feet are worshipped and meditated upon by great mystic yogis and highly learned philosophers. We wish that these lotus feet may also be awakened within our hearts, although we are only ordinary persons engaged in household affairs. And then when I was reading third canto, actually there's a series of verses which glorify the lotus feet. This is actually at the time of creation. All the elements were created and the demigods, you know, the presiding deities of each element, so the demigods presiding over each element, they just couldn't carry forward the creation anymore. And so then they offer these nice prayers to the lotus feet of Krishna, which I find personally very inspirational. So I'm sharing them with you. The demigod said, O Lord, your lotus feet are like an umbrella for the surrendered souls, protecting them from all the miseries of material existence. All the sages under that shelter throw off all material miseries. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet. And there are some particular words here that have been highlighted. This anjasa. So part of the, how actually taking shelter of the lotus feet removes the miseries is that anjasa is very quickly, and uru means actually from the root, And ukshipanti means that it's like thrown far away, whatever is the misery or obstacle. You know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, just like if you get a leech, you know, and you throw the leech like far away, and it's just never going to come back when you throw it like that. So that is how taking shelter of the lotus feet really like removes our miseries completely. And then they speak, I'm not going to go through all the details of these verses because I don't want to do a Bhagavatam class here, but just highlighting a few things that the demigods said. That then they say that those who take shelter of lotus feet, actually the lotus feet are the place which is the repository of full knowledge of Krishna. And then they speak about how they can deliver us from all sinful reactions, and knowledge and detachment is also fully attained by taking shelter, and it gives us remembrance and courage at all times. So how to actually meditate on the lotus feet? So as we know, Krishna's feet, they are decorated with various auspicious symbols like the flag and thunderbolt and elephant, and if we meditate on these symbols, actually it is said that we can overcome all the obstacles, and all doubts and all fears within the heart can be vanquished. So here's another verse right from the third canto also. This is Kapila Dev speaking. This chapter is his instructions on execution of devotional service. And he's talking about meditation on the, you know, marks on the lotus feet of the Lord as one of the ways to execute devotional service. So here he says the devotee should first concentrate his mind on the Lord's lotus feet, which are adorned with the marks of a thunderbolt, a goat, a banner, and a lotus. The splendor of their beautiful ruby nails resembles the orbit of the moon and dispels the thick gloom of one's heart. And the lotus feet of the Lord, not only they're a form of meditation, but they're also, they manifest within the mind of one who tries to take shelter of the lotus feet by regular spiritual practice. And one of the spiritual practice that we do every day is chanting of the holy names. So it is a recommended method. The gopis are also speaking about how these marks on the lotus feet of Krishna, how they particularly distinguish Krishna from Krishna's lotus feet from everyone else. They recognize him as the son of Nanda Maharaj, and they're speaking about some of these signs. So there's many places actually where these different marks are mentioned. Again, I'm not going to read this whole thing, but just for you to know. So this is from Skanda Purana. It says there are 6 marks on Krishna's lotus feet. And Vaishnava Toshini by Sanatana Goswami, you know, it describes that there's 11 marks on Krishna's right foot. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that there is 8 marks on his left foot, and so on. And even Prabhupada talks about this as a way of meditation. He says that you can control the mind when you fix up the mind on Krishna's lotus feet. That's all. No nonsense can come within your mind. Simply Krishna. That is perfection of meditation. So basically, you know, when you're chanting, you can like just close your eyes and picture all the marks on Krishna's lotus feet. And we're going to go through the meanings of each of these marks and how you can actually focus on each mark individually during the chanting. So here is also the other shastras where the meanings are mentioned. The Skanda Purana, Matsya Purana, Garga Samhita, Sararatha Darshini, Ananda Chandrika, and Rupa Chintamani by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Sri Jiva Goswami, Shikara Pada Yugala Samharthi. So first, because I know all of you may not be familiar with the marks, we're just going to go over what are the names of these different symbols, and then we'll go into the meaning, alright? So here is, here we go. Here's the right foot of Krishna. This is the barley corn symbol. This is the disc, as you know. This is called the upcurving line. This is a lotus. This is an elephant goad. This is a thunderbolt. This is a flag. This is obvious. Umbrella is obvious. This is the jambu fruit. There is a swastikas and there's an octagon. Then on the left foot, you have a conch. There's these two concentric circles. This is called the sky or akash. Then there is an unstrung bow. This is the hoof print of a cow. There is water pots or pitchers. And there's a triangle, half moon and a fish. And this is Radharani's lotus feet. And there's many marks that are similar, but there are a few that are different. So here's a mountain. Here is an altar for Vedic sacrifices, or you can call it a yajna pit. This is an earring. And this is a chariot. This is a club. This is a spear, or it's also called as a shakti weapon. And let's see what else is different here. Here is a bracelet, a flower, and this is called a flower creeper. So these are the different marks. And this is just something in glorification of Lord Gauranga's and Lord Nityananda's lotus feet. A slight mentioning of the glories of the lotus feet of their lordship, Sri Sri Nityananda Gauranga, removes the thirst for everything else. They're expert in destroying the calamities of everyone who meditate on them and bestow all good fortune. One being highly astonished on seeing their beauty, which gladdens all the senses, their touch removes all miseries of fatigue and awards infinite happiness. May these lotus feet of their lordship, Sri Sri Nityananda Gauranga, fulfill all my desires. Even a slight worship of the lotus feet of their lordship, Sri Sri Nityananda Gauranga, turns a mere stone into a purposeful gem, a mere cow into a kamadenu, a mere tree into a kalpa vriksha. There's a typo there, desire tree. They fulfill all the desires of a living being. Who will not take shelter of this lotus feet of their lordships? And here's the marks on Lord Nityananda's lotus feet. So most of the marks are covered. There's only two which are not there. This is a plow, and this is the arrows, which are not there on other Radha and Krishna's lotus feet. And the plow is meant for cultivation. Sometimes we really find that everything is so dry and barren in our heart, right? Like nothing is moving, nothing is growing. It's just like dry, like a desert. And at those times, you can actually meditate. You can think of this sign on Lord Nityananda's lotus feet, and think of how Lord Nityananda can cultivate your heart. You know, he can plow your heart and make little room for the water of hearing and chanting to go through, you know, and something may grow out of there. Because if it's hard, like, you know, just nothing grows. And these arrows, very interestingly, nobody knows the meaning. I have done a lot of research. And somehow these arrows on Lord Nityananda's lotus feet, I don't know the meaning. I've asked somebody on the Shastric Advisory Council too, if they know. And they said, no, this is the only sign. We don't know what exactly the meaning is. Actually, there's two more signs on Lord Gauranga's lotus feet too that we don't know the meaning of. All other marks, we know the meaning. This is actually just the first verse of Gauranga Raduti Pada, glorifying the Lord. Sorry, Nithai Pada Kamala, sorry. This is Lord Nityananda's lotus feet. And this is Lord Gauranga's lotus feet. And as you can imagine, Lord Gauranga's lotus feet has all the signs that are there in Radha and Krishna's lotus feet, right? And he has a few additional ones. there is a stick here, and this also again, I don't know the meaning, and there is a flower garland and a tortoise. These are the three that are different in Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, and we don't know the meanings of these, unfortunately. So, now you all did this exercise of evaluating your japa, right? So what I want you to do now, just take 2 more minutes and kind of write down what are your very specific distractions or your specific struggles in your chanting. What help, if Krishna could give you whatever help you wanted, what help would you want to really improve your chanting? I want you to identify this first, because actually at the lotus feet of Krishna and Radharani and of course Lord Nityananda and Lord Gauranga, we can find, you know, the solution for everything. They are our ultimate shelter. And in a way, all our distractions, wherever our mind takes us, in a way, what is it? In a way, it is nothing but are taking shelter in those places. So we have a need, we have some need within our heart, and we're taking shelter in the wrong place. And that's what we're really doing with all these distractions. So I want you to, you know, write, be very specific as you can. And then we're going to go through the meanings of the different marks. And I would like you to then identify which marks can actually give an answer to all your distractions and all your needs, actually. Because there's a healthy way of fulfilling our needs. We have needs, that's a fact. But there's a healthy way and there's an unhealthy way. So please take a few minutes. Okay, everyone has their specifics. Yes. Can I tell you a graphic story of to what extent, you know, we can go to fulfill some need that we have? Some of you have heard it. Those here from me. Some of you have heard it. It's a very graphic story. I heard this story. It was shared by Marshall Rosenberg, the person who speaks about nonviolent communication. So, you know, he tries to practice this compassionate communication, and he goes to different places. And so he goes to a prison once, and then he meets this person who was in the prison for the 3rd or 4th time. And he was in the prison because he was basically, you know, like a child molester. And so this person was really, Marshall Rosenberg was trying to speak to him very compassionately, trying to help him identify, you know, what's his need. So he said, obviously, you're getting something from what you're doing. Because if you were not getting something, why would you keep coming back to the prison? Being in the prison is not something fun, actually. So obviously, you're getting some need met by this. And this person was like really, really struck. It's like nobody has ever even talked to me, you know, so nicely. And, you know, what to speak of acknowledging some need or, you know, even to treat me like a human being, actually. And it was really hard for him to say anything because he didn't understand what his need was. But he kept asking in different ways. And finally, after a long time of a lot of questioning and talking and helping him, he said, I have 2 needs. One is the need to belong in a community, and the other is the need to feel that somebody understands my pain. So it turns out that this person was abused as a child, and he was very, very terrified. And so he said, when I look at the terror in the eyes of other children, then it fulfills my need for being, you know, acknowledged or accepted, or just that somebody understands my heart. pretty like far out. And then Marshall asked him, okay, I understand that, but why do you like first bring all the children to your home and, you know, you feed them nicely, kind of like have a, like a little party almost? And then he said, yeah, he doesn't identify both the needs first. He identifies this one first. And then he asks, well, why do you bring the children and treat them so nicely and everything? And then he says, well, because I need to feel I belong to a community. So he never felt like he belonged anywhere. And so he went to this extent. I always find, I share this story often with people, because it really shows us to what extent, you know, any of us can go to just to fulfill some simple need. Like, we can go into such unhealthy patterns. And then that he identified the need, then he said, is there, you know, would you be open to fulfilling this need in a healthy way? And then, you know, his life got transformed. So we also know that the true need of the soul is only two things: to love and be loved. That's only the two real needs. There's other needs that we want to belong, we want to, you know, there's certain human needs. But the true needs are these two. And for that we go to so many different extents. So as we go through, and Krishna's lotus feet are our true shelter. So whatever the need is, we can find shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. So as we're going through this description of the different signs, you can please try to find which marks you particularly resonate with. And I would encourage all of you to like meditate on these marks, because you can fulfill your needs in a very healthy way. Perhaps some of our hearts are really broken in some places. And there's a healthy way to fulfilling that rather than carrying, you know, just like this burning feeling, or, you know, we just feel miserable in the community, we stop talking to people, or, you know, just, you know, rude, harsh, whatever it is, right? Different people have different ways of dealing with things. So here is, again, Krishna's lotus feet. We'll go through each sign. And later, right now you can just focus here. I have all the meanings printed for all of you. I'll hand out a copy, but I don't want to be distracted right now. So I'll pass it on after we go through this. So here is the symbol of a barley corn. So the symbol of barley corn is basically, it's a corn, it's a grain, right? So it represents three things. One is that it can award us any opulence we want. It also cuts short the cycle of births and deaths for a devotee into something very small, like a grain. And just as grains provide nourishment, by meditating on this sign, you can feel nourished within your heart. Then you have the disc. The disc, who can tell me what the disc can possibly represent? That's not difficult. Huh? Destroy the anarthas. And what are our main anarthas? The six categories. The six categories. Yes, somebody said it. Kama, krodha, lobha. Okay, very good. So lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, madness. So all these things are destroyed. And then the shining effulgence around the disc, actually it brings illumination into our heart and destroys the darkness of sin. And it also represents the time factor, right? It is because of the influence of time that all events happen in our life. And if something is happening in our life right now, our prarabdha karma is like unfolding, right? It is because of the influence of time factor. And if you meditate on this sign, it is said that you will not be influenced by the time factor. So although the events may be happening, you're not going to experience the suffering within that. Then there is the lotus. The lotus, it creates greed for prema, for Krishna, in the minds of bee-like devotees, it is said. And it's also a symbol a fortune or success. And Radha and Krishna, they use this lotus to give benedictions upon the devotees. So it's a nice sign to meditate upon. It also indicates that Radha and Krishna never leave the lotus of Vrindavan. They're always situated in Vrindavan. Then we have the elephant goad. So elephant goad is something by which we can control our mind, our elephant-like mind. Sometimes it's really not easy, you know, if you want to change the direction in which the elephant is walking, you gotta have some skill, right? It doesn't move very easily. So that's why it said that by meditating on this sign, our elephant-like mind can be, you know, steered in the right direction. There's also some esoteric meanings of these signs, which I'm not going into. We're just going into the meanings that, things that we can really relate with. But it's also said that Radharani is the only one who can, control the elephant like Krishna. Then we have the thunderbolt. Who can tell me what the thunderbolt can do? Yeah, so thunderbolt typically like shatters things, right? So it's described even in the third canto how the thunderbolt can shatter, destroy our mountains of sin. Mountains of sin. We have a lot of sin. I think that was the only thing. Yeah, oh, there's one more, that whoever meditates on this sign can become exalted like Lord Indra if you want to become Lord Indra. And then there's the flag. So the flag, of course, it's a sign of security and protection and from any kind of fear for the devotees. Then there is the umbrella. We talked about the umbrella a little bit before. The umbrella protects us from the rainfall of material miseries. And it also signifies Krishna holding the Govardhan hill like an umbrella for the protection of all the Rajavasis. And those who sit in the shade of this umbrella of Krishna can become like kings, because typically kings sit under umbrellas, right? So you can become like a king, you can become the master. And then you have master of your own mind. So let's start with that. King of our mind. Just in case you're thinking you're going to become some other kind of king or master. Then there is the jambu fruit. And this jambu fruit, basically, it means that this meditation on the lotus seat is for everyone who resides in the island of Jambudvip. And I think we all qualify for that. We all are in the Jambudvip. And the swastika, of course, is auspiciousness. And the octagon is for protection in all eight directions. And also, anything you desire in the eight directions, you can get that by meditating on this sign. And then we miss one more here. There's the up-curving line. I like to meditate on that a lot. The up-curving line is basically that if somebody holds on to this line on Krishna's lotus feet, you will be very quickly transported to the spiritual world, especially if you hold on to that line like a lifeline. This is my life. And it also means that the mercy of Krishna, it descends even to the most fallen souls. So it doesn't matter. So sometimes we really feel like we have no hope at all. If you're feeling like that, just hang on to that. It's coming down. This line is coming down. This rope is coming down. And it is also a very direct path. It's a straight path. It's a narrow path to Radha and Krishna, to the shelter of Radha and Krishna. It's like a razor's edge, really. So you don't want to go too much this way or that way. You may get hurt. So it's a narrow path. So that's the right foot. And then we go to the left foot. There is the conch. conch again is a sign of victory, and one is always saved from all kinds of distress. You hear in the Bhagavad Gita, they're blowing the conches, and when the Pandavas blew their conches, it shattered the hearts on the other side, because, you know, it was just sounding like they're going to be victorious on the other side. So this is a symbol of victory, and you can get fearlessness. And also the conch holds amrita or nectar. So you want some nectar sometimes, you can meditate on the sign. And then there is the concentric circles. These concentric circles, I said they represent the sky. And this basically signifies how Krishna is everywhere and yet he is detached. He's in everything and everything is in him, but yet he's not attached to anything. So one of the things, really, the only reason we ever get disturbed is because we have an attachment in that situation, a particular kind of attachment. If you're not attached, you're not going to be disturbed by anything. So there is some attachment for some kind of enjoyment from that situation, whatever form that is. Sometimes it takes the form of, I want to be the controller, I want to be the most powerful, I want to be, you know, great. And sometimes it's the other way, that I'm the poor victim, you know, and nobody loves me and nobody cares for me, and, you know, both are two sides of the false ego. So there's attachment. So we want to be seen. I'm a victim, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. You know, somebody hurt me, and we keep running that story again and again and again. So we can understand there is attachment to trying to find some enjoyment as a victim. Believe it or not, we find a lot of enjoyment as a victim, especially in Kali Yuga. This victim mentality is extremely common in Kali Yuga. So you can meditate on this sign to become detached. Then there is the half-strung bow, and this is also a symbol of victory and becoming free from difficulties. And then there is the hoof print of the cow. This is easy for everyone, right? The material ocean shrinks to less than the water held in a cow's hoof print. Then there is the water pots. The water pots basically contain amrita or nectar to be freely consumed by the surrendered souls. Freely. And it's always, and believe it or not, this water pot is always full. It never gets empty. So you can keep consuming all the nectar you want. And it's also, when a pot is full, it's considered to be very auspicious. So just by even meditating on this sign, you can bring auspiciousness into your life. Then we have the triangle. This triangle has a lot of threes. So this triangle, it protects the devotees from the three modes of nature. It protects us from the threefold miseries. It is the final refuge for everyone in the three worlds. And it's the shelter for demigods, humans, animals, so all threes you can remember. And our body, mind, words, you know, all of these are meant to be engaged in this full meditation upon Krishna. And last but not the least, it also says that it attracts the fixed gaze of the three eyes of Lord Shiva. So, and then there's the half moon. So the half moon, who wears the half moon again? Lord Shiva wears the half moon. And so even Lord Shiva is, you know, worshipping and taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And the moon is, we've been hearing Shikshastaka, moon is like the cooling rays. It's not harsh like the sun rays. So sometimes we feel really scorched in our life too. You can meditate on the sign and just feel cooled by this. And what else is moon? People usually go crazy on full moon day or Amavasya day. That's the time that, you know, people's minds are most affected. And so this is also the deity of the mind. Moon is the deity of the mind. So if the mind is really like giving us a hard time, we can meditate on this sign and our mind will become controlled. And then there's the fish. So fish can never live without water. And so a devotee also cannot actually live without the lotus feet of Krishna even for a moment. And also the lotus fish never lives in a dry place, right? So if we really want Krishna's lotus feet to come within our heart, then we must, you know, melt our heart. Currently our hearts are quite hard. And we hear in Nectar of Devotion the description of how one on the platform of Bhava and Prema, how are their hearts? What's the description? Who remembers? The Bhakti Shastri students. Huh? Butter soft. It just melts. It just moves with every emotion. You know, it just moves. Everything that Krishna does, you know, it just awakens loving emotion. We are also moved by everything, but that's because we are identified with everything, and so we're moved by everything. But that moving by everything makes our heart harder and harder. But this kind of moving it's a very soft heart, and that is when Krishna's lotus feet can really enter our heart. And also that Krishna takes the form of Matsya during Pralaya. So, and Radharani's lotus feet, we didn't do that. There's a few signs here. So there is the Homa Kunda here, or the altar. And so what do? In the Homa Kunda, we are offering grains, we're doing these yajnas. So, just like the grains are burnt, so our sins are burnt. And just today morning we did the yajna, and what we are doing by offering the grains is actually offering our, you know, sins, really. Our sins are getting burnt through that. And also the universe, as Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita too, that the universe is nourished by yajnas. So we can also be nourished by meditating on the sign on Radharani's lotus feet. So many signs, right, which can nourish us. I mean, sometimes we really feel like, just like there's nothing, you know, like we feel dead. There's no life in our life. And we can find a lot of nourishment from Krishna's lotus feet. You can pick any sign you want. There's so many signs which can nourish us. And the Homa Kunda, yeah. And yeah, there's another esoteric meaning that I won't go into. And then there is the chariot. The chariot is the chariot of our mind, which always likes to take us in different directions for a ride. And it's usually quite successful. But by meditating on this sign, we can control the chariot of our mind. And it also signifies that Krishna becomes our chariot driver, and that the chariot, one who has a chariot, doesn't find it difficult to conquer anything. At least, we hear that in our Vedic times, those who had, and Arjuna had that special chariot, so there was no fear. He knew that he was going to win the war. So, you can meditate on this sign to win some nice things. Don't desire wrong things, you know. But you can win, you can conquer, there's no fear of anything. And then just really quickly, a few other signs is the club. The club is again something by which we can conquer our sinful lust. And then there is the earring. So the earring is actually signifies Krishna's ears. So although it's on Radharani's lotus feet, but it means that Krishna's ears are always alert in hearing any noise that she makes. You know, her tinkling of ankle bells, or her, you know, melodious voice, or, you know, sometimes Radharani chants amazing poetry, so he's always alert to her. And then there is the mountain, and this signifies that although Govardhan Hill is the best of mountains, but Govardhan Hill takes shelter at the lotus feet of Radharani. And there is the bracelet, and this also signifies Krishna's hands, how Krishna is always eager to serve Radharani's feet. And Krishna is also eager to serve his devotees like that. And then the Shakti weapon. The Shakti weapon basically is, it breaks our misery. Here's the Shakti weapon. It breaks our bonds to material existence, and it also is a source or reservoir for all kinds of powers, because Radharani is described as Sarva Shakti Mai sometimes. And then the last sign here is the flower, or two more, is fragrance. The fame of Radharani is everywhere, like the fragrance. And then the flower creeper, Vali here. It symbolizes how the desire creeper within the heart of devotees, the Bhakti Lata creeper, it keeps growing and growing until it reaches the lotus feet of Radharani. And she's also described as the goddess of herbal medicine. And what is the medicine we need? Really, she has the best medicine for our disease of materialism. This is the best herb to take on her lotus feet. And Radharani always, you know, she's always holding on to Krishna. So in that way, also the devotees like to clasp on to this sign to never leave Krishna's lotus feet. So these are the signs. And so now... I'll just read this one last slide and then I would like you to chant around. The soles of the Lord's lotus feet are marked by Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, Kangshal, Disc, Club and Lotus, and also by a flag and thunderbolt. When Krishna walks on this earth, these marks are visible wherever he goes. Vrindavan Dham is a transcendental place because of Krishna's walking on this land frequently. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were fortunate to see these marks here and there. When Akrura went to Vrindavan to take Krishna and Balaram away to the festival arranged by Kamsa, upon seeing the marks of the Lord's lotus feet on the ground of Vrindavan, he fell down and began to groan. The demigods were jubilant not only because the appearance of the Supreme Lord would do away with the burdensome demons, but also because they would be able to see the ground marked with the transcendental marks from the soles of the Lord's lotus feet. And then the gopis also, they're always absorbed in the thought of the Lord's lotus feet when he was walking in the pasturing grounds, and simply by thinking of the Lord's lotus feet, the gopis were fully absorbed in transcendence. Like the gopis, one who is always absorbed in thought of the Lord is beyond the material platform and will not remain in this material world. It is our duty, therefore, always to hear, chant and think about the Lord's lotus feet, as actually done by Vaishnavas who have decided to live in Vrindavan always and think of the Lord's lotus feet 24 hours a day. So, I'm going to project again these lotus feet. Maybe we can distribute these meanings also now. And I'd like you all to please chant one round now. And you can stay with one mark, or you can move around, that is fine. But see if you can, you've identified some of your distractions or some of the help that you need, and see which mark you would like to focus on and try to chant one round now. Some devotees also like to chant all their 16 rounds. You know, there's 19 marks on Krishna's lotus feet. We chant 16 rounds, so they just meditate on one mark, you know, for each round. And there's 3 extra signs, in case you want to go there too.
If you don't have your beads, Madhav Gauranga Prabhu is going around. So raise your hands, he can come and give you the beads.
Can I have a set of beads? My beads are away there, so take care.
Please raise your hands. Are we ready to start chanting? Huh? Okay. We prefer that everybody settles down, so like whatever you want to do, so there's no distraction, you can be focused. Yeah. This one session is not child friendly. So if your babies are there and they need attention, please take them in the lobby. And when we are done with chanting, you can bring them back again. Thank you. So we'll start now.
I think most of you must have finished your one round. How many of you found it helpful? Raise your hands. Okay, very good. Would someone like to share something? Yeah. Go ahead.
Symbols, so my mind keeps probing which symbol to choose initially, but then once I settle down, say for example lotus, just keeps in lotus for some time, then starts to think, okay, what can we do next? That's
okay.
The thing right
now. So it's
now.
Kind of like an experience you're sharing. Yeah, so that's why I said that, at least for now, like, you know, write down what you specifically want, what help, and then fix on a sign. But that's okay. I mean, you're trying it for the first time, and I can understand that, oh, you got a lot of information. Okay, should I do this? Is the best symbol to meditate on now, or should I do this, or should I do that? And that's okay.
Mataji, that half-curve line you mentioned, that somehow it just gone deeper, and somehow I was feeling so hopeless in my life for past some time, and I could literally feel the connection, the spiritual mentor, spiritual master, and Srila Prabhupada, through that, okay. Literally could feel the connection, and also the disc to destroy the six kind of enemies.
Okay,
it was really
good.
Helpful. Thank
okay,
you.
Good. It really helps, because sometimes many things are going on in our life and we sit down to chant with a very disturbed mind, and our mind is somewhere and our hand is moving, mouth is moving, tongue is moving, but that is not the definition of sadhana. Sadhana means that it's the senses along with the mind engaged in this activity of devotional service and keeping in mind the goal. And that is when it's, you know, sadhana. So it's really helpful then. Whatever is going on in the mind, you can bring it here. Yes, Prabhu Sudhir.
Hare Krishna Mataji. For me, as you just shared, when I start chanting, mind is going in different directions, but trying to focus on the conch, the attention span, really, the focus immediately comes there on at least that symbol, and also the amount of time it takes to concentrate on the holy name, it's very short actually. But I also have some other, like to have your thoughts on when we say we need to focus hearing each and every symbol. When I try to do this, maybe I'm not focusing on hearing the each and every syllable as much, so want to have your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah. I think we should save question answers for later, but since you asked this question, I'll quickly just answer this. Is that this is your first time, so you may just be distracted, but in general, you're focusing on this symbol in your mind also. You're not just looking at it. And I like to think of it like when you're having any conversation with anyone, right? Like even over lunch. There is what you're saying, and then there is how you're saying. And the how you're saying doesn't distract you from what you're saying, but it adds to what you're saying. So similarly, so this is like you're taking shelter of this particular sign. It's the how. So if you look at it like that, it's not going to take away from, you know, your focus on hearing the holy name, but it'll actually help it. It takes some practice, but it's your first time, so that's understandable. Okay. One or two others can share, Yashatrupa and Sumangala maybe.
Hare Krishna Madhu. Something that I felt was I could hear the name properly. And there was a little prayer added to it. some of the symbols or signs that just came to me were the earrings at Radharani's lotus feet. It just connected me to the past retreats where we have heard that
Krishna is
just when we say Krishna and Krishna is hearing, so that kind of connected. And the other symbol was chakra. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Mataji. Very nice meditation that we could learn. I was meditating on first with the chakra, and then I was meditating on like umbrella. Both the phases when I was meditating, mind was fully absorbed and feel like some kind of relief, or like, you know, it's taken care kind of, like shelter kind
shelter.
Of. Yeah, and then I was meditating on the lotus flower for quite a lot of time, and then it was really amazing when I was meditating on lotus flower. I never, you know, first usually I focus on anardas, but lotus flower like gave a peace to the mind and like, you know, doesn't want to move away from that symbol. And then I was meditating on the hand bracelet, and immediately my thought went to like Radharani and Krishna placing hand on my, you know, head, and like for a second my whole body was like, you know, shaken. And I was thinking, like, even just for a fraction of second, like how it feels, what kind it would be like, you know, being like in those thoughts and being Goloka, like, you know, kind of unimaginable right now. But it was really, and the Bhakti Creeper, it was really amazing.
Thank you very much. Because of time, we have lots more to share with you. And we can continue maybe the sharing question answers in the end. I mean, we are open to just hearing all of you if that's something you want more than all the other things we want to share with you. But I'm thinking to just maybe stop the sharing now so that Hemangi Mataji can do her part, and then I have more things later. So which one would you like? Okay, good. Continue? Okay.
This is a difficult act to follow. Like I said...
It'll be very easy, actually. She's going to speak right from the heart. It's nothing about a technique or anything, you know. So she's going to speak right from the heart.
A heart that's hard? When we started the presentation, we said, you can approach this same subject matter, depending upon your own personality, in a different way, because you can understand Krishna in your own way. It's a personal relationship. Like I said, since I became a mother, my focus has been to be a mother first. And being a mother means everything else actually takes a second. You know, second phase, yeah. You know, you want to really chant attentively, you really want to read Prabhupada's books attentively, you want to do this attentively. So these are for all the mothers, you know. I think they will identify with my experience. So, I'm into stories. I can never just speak principles. That's my drawback. Is that okay? Okay? Okay. So, 4 years ago, I was chanting, and like as Premathani Mataji was sharing, my heart was so hard, and that time I didn't... No, sorry. He said sometimes hearts can be so hard. Sorry. No. I'm just trying to see how I should start my story and not get lost in the story. Hey, I always create controversies. That's why I don't like. But good, she's here. I told her she can keep a check on me how I'm saying things. So I went through a phase in my life. I was doing my duties and my services dutifully, but in the process of, you know, doing things dutifully, I kind of got lost somewhere. You know, maybe it happens with everyone, I don't know, but it happened with me. And it came to a point, to be very honest, I did entertain, is this path for me? I was questioning everything that I believed in, the people I believed in, the people who gave me inspiration. I was I was thinking, did I put my trust and faith in the right person? So I was kind of doubting everybody, and at one point I felt I need to just leave Chicago for some time and not be a mother for a few days and not be a wife for a few days and not be Himangi Devi Dasi for a few days and just be me, you know. So my son and my husband were very supportive. I took a 6 weeks break. I went 3 weeks to Vrindavan and 3 weeks to Mayapur. And when I was on the flight, I just realized that in 40 years, this is the first time I'm by myself. I've never traveled by myself. I always had my father-in-law, my father, my husband, somebody accompanying me. And I said, man, this is really nice. You know, I should do this more often. Vrindavan was hectic and it was a little distracting. I had some friends there, so we did nice kirtan together. It was nice, but it was a little distracting because I had some service there. But once I reached Mayapur, I had no plans, you know. So it so happened that Maharaj was actually there for some meeting. He was leaving the next day. And he came to know through my friends that I was in Mayapur. He called me and he said, hey, you know, welcome to Mayapur. And I have few things, like Maharaj always has to give some service, you know. So your focus. So he said, I have some things for you to take back to Chicago. I said, okay, you know. So... and from there, the conversation started. He wanted to know what my plan was for the 3 weeks and how I should take an AC room and not, you know, in Vamsi building. It's hot, no AC. I said, I'm from India, Maharaj. I can manage the heat, you know. He said, Himangi, you don't know. I said, no, I can manage. So finally, he left. But before he left, we had a long conversation because he asked me why I was there. And I said, I have this... I'm in a stuck place and there's no movement and I have no taste for chanting. I'm chanting because I took a vow and I've lost almost temporarily, I knew that, temporarily I've lost faith in everything. So I've come here to reconnect and some of the things I shared, I was told not to, because one thing I would appreciate all of you is, even though I tell my stories, it's a very, I need your help to create a sacred space, because sometimes it's not easy, you know, to share your journey. But this is who I am. It was nice. I went and I was at that point, one of my favorite prayers were the Shikshashtaka prayers. They're my all-time favorite because it's straight from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Those are the only 8 prayers that he has given us, like, you know, so there is this personal connection with Lord Chaitanya, I feel. So I was telling him that I'm hearing one of my heroes and my, you know, somebody who inspires me a lot in my Krishna, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, his lectures. So I said, this is what I'm doing. And he said, why don't you read Chaitanya Bhagavat? And I said, my God, my heart doesn't even move, you know. So I'm just reading Bhagavad Gita. He said, fine. We had a long conversation because what brought my heart there to that difficult space was my struggle in a particular relationship. And all those years I kept going because I had some faith, because Maharaj said that see Krishna behind everything and things will sort out, you know, things will clear up. So I continued, and that was the first time I was in front of Narsingadev, Prahlad Narsimha in Mayapur, and I was chanting and I went back to my room. I finally took an AC room because I couldn't handle the heat. So I should have listened to the spiritual master is always right, you know. So it was nice. I went into my AC room and I started chanting. And I started chanting and I continued chanting and I continued chanting.
And it was an amazing experience. Because my meditation was on the fifth verse of Shikshashtaka prayer. And what was nice was because Maharaj said that the only way you can transcend your blocks is through the holy name. So try to take your attention there. So I did that. And he was in America, I was in Mayapur. So I wrote to him, is this real or I'm being sahajiya? Because in all these years, I've never experienced something like this. So he said, no, it's just a shadow. And he warned me, it will be there, but it will soon go. And it will not be there. So don't get disturbed, but you continue. Krishna is merciful. He's giving you that experience. Basically, he instructed me. He gave me, it's too personal, so I'm not sharing, because if I share, then I have to give you more details to put it in context. And it was a very, very difficult instruction. And he shared that, because I asked him, if you were in this situation, how would you deal with this situation? So Maharaj usually doesn't like to answer those kind of questions, but he did. And I was very grateful. So I was sincerely hoping and praying that I will follow that, because he mercifully shared that with me. So the point I'm getting is, we all go through our journeys where we, you know, face obstacles and this and that. But there has to be this faith in a particular relationship. If it's spiritual master, great. But if you have some shiksha gurus, somebody that you can put your faith, you need that relationship to transcend, you know, whatever obstacles you have. So that's one of the principles that I carry very deeply in my heart. Because these devotees, they can see what you can't see through your conditioned state. So even when they give you an instruction, it's impossible to follow. You know, you're not very sure that this is the right instruction for me. Just do it, even if your heart is not 100% into it. Just do it. And then you will see the reciprocation. And for me, the reciprocation was instant. And that was Guru and Krishna's special mercy. You know, it instantly happened in that day itself. Because actually, through that, I realized that you have many obstacles in your life. Obstacles in relationships, physical obstacles. Your body doesn't cooperate with you. So many other, your job, your school, family situation, there's so many obstacles. And if you, even being a devotee, if you're just trying to, you know, fix, you know, each of these departments, you know, let me fix my relationship with my whatever, you know, friend, husband, wife, daughter, son, or, you know, let me see if I can find a different job. So whatever obstacle I'm facing in my workplace, I can change. It will take a long time. But if we take our attention and actually focus to solve the obstacles that we face during our chanting, something magic happens. All the other problems get solved. You don't have to individually solve this problem, this problem, this problem. Actually, if you focus on just, you know, fixing your attention, and, you know, I want to have this relationship with Nama Prabhu. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says that you have to completely surrender unto Him, right? But Lord Chaitanya is so merciful, He gives us concession. We are not qualified. We are not like really ready for the holy name, but He has given us a holy name. So Nama Prabhu is like totally, like very powerful, very potent, you know, form of the Lord, the holy name. And all we need to do is like, we need to desire. So the principle I'm talking now is that desire, that consciously every day when we take this feedback and we sit down to chant, we have to say, I recommit to my relationship with Krishna, with the holy name, Nama Prabhu. The desire you have to constantly, you know, develop. If you don't do that, then it's very mechanical. You know, you can keep chanting like I did for years together, you know, and I won't say nothing happened, but things happen very slowly. But when I realized that, you know, what actually, where my attention should go is to the desire, it changed the quality of my chanting. So, because just imagine, Krishna has been with us in our heart as a super soul, life after life, you know, for millions and billions of years. He's actually our best friend, you know, he's been with us. The friends that we have now may not be our friends in our next lifetime, because we don't know where we are going and where they're going. But who stays with us is the Krishna in the form of the super soul. And we have the most contaminated, you know, senses. Our tongue is contaminated, our ears are contaminated, our eyes are everything is contaminated. But Nama Prabhu, for me it's very personal. When I'm chanting, I do make a distinction between Krishna as Shyamasundar form and Krishna as a holy name. So then I think, you know, Nama Prabhu is so merciful that he comes every day. He sits with me, he goes through this journey. Though I'm distracted, I'm looking here and I'm looking there, I'm thinking about something, but he has been my companion all this lifetime, even in this very lifetime. It's very profound. If you can just pause and think, and you know, it's very, very profound that who could be so unconditionally be there for you day in and day out, life after life. So actually you have to understand that Krishna is truly in that sense your best friend. Even if it is in your head today, theoretically you have an understanding, it's no problem. But keep telling your mind, Krishna is my best friend when you're chanting. And you beg to Nam Prabhu, I really, really want to have that personal relationship with you. Because honestly, even in our mundane relationship, until and unless we don't express our desire to be in a relationship with someone, the other person will not reciprocate it. Isn't it true? It's not going to happen automatically. So you have to make this conscious journey, the conscious effort that keep recommitting to that relationship, that I want to be in a relationship with you. And then look, then you'll see like how beautifully he reciprocates. You don't have to do much. Actually, he gets pleased very easily. And well, we all, then at least I had this ecstatic experience. That was, and I was so thrilled that after, like, you know, almost 20 years, I was actually for the first time felt that, oh, I'm chanting. So I don't know what I did before that, but I really felt that I'm in a relationship and I'm chanting. And so that came through the mercy of the spiritual master. And we are all products of that mercy. So till now I've covered what principle, mercy of the relationship with the spiritual master and cultivating the right kind of desire and wanting to recommitting to that relationship. I came back to Chicago, got busy again. As days went by, weeks went by, months went by, I came back to ground zero, again the same problem, very inattentive chanting and struggling. And especially when you go through that kind of experience, you know what you're not having and what you're missing. All those years when I didn't know, it didn't bother, you know, I was just saying, Hare Krishna, okay, I need to do my 16 rounds. Literally how Prabhupada would say, now I can do any damn thing I can do. I literally used to feel like that, okay, now I can go about and do whatever I need to do. But once I tasted that, I started missing it. And I started feeling even more miserable now. Man, you know, I've gone back to the same thing and, you know, it was very hard. And then it was a struggle for some months. And the journey took me to one day, like, literally crying out. I was crying. And I said, Krishna, you're so far. You said simply, you know, it's so simple. Just chant and be happy. It's not so simple. And you're so damn far, you know. I can't even imagine that in this lifetime, I can even come, you know, half the distance towards you. It was really like, you know, feeling miserable. And then just chanting. And I was just telling Nama Prabhu, please, please, please be merciful. And I was not even paying attention to be very honest with the mantra. But I was chanting and I was just crying and, you know. And suddenly it dawned to me, actually Krishna is not so far away. He's actually in my heart. Physically he's only this much far away from me because my heart is right here. He's not that far. What makes me feel that he's very far is my mind and my conceptions, my desires, and what I want to do and where I want to go, and my expectation of myself as a devotee, what I should be and where I should be and what I should be doing. And I said, man, he's right here. And he's listening to me and he's being with me and he is witnessing everything that I'm going through. All I need to do every day when I'm doing japa is just talk to him, then I feel your presence. So that was my second phase. And that's where I am today. Some days are very absent-minded chanting, but I do say, like most days, I consciously start my japa thinking that Krishna is here, he's not that far. You know, he's very much my best friend. He's there to help me, and I just have to call out to him, and he'll reach out to me and give me some inspiration or something magically happens. So you all have to go through your journey like that, and you'll have your own beautiful stories, you know. And the other thing is, what was I trying to go into say? Don't give up. Just because if the reciprocation doesn't come immediately, don't give up. Keep trying. Keep trying. It may take few months, it may take few years. Whatever I was struggling with and I was working with Maharaj, it took us 3 years. There was silence between us for 3 years on that particular topic. I was getting frustrated, but he was trying to teach me a lesson. And partly my false ego was also hurting to go and ask him, so where do we stand on this topic? I didn't want to do that because I want to pretend that I'm a very advanced devotee. It's true, I'm sharing my heart where I was. But I'm glad that he didn't respond. I'm glad that I was made to wait for those 3 years, because when the reciprocation came from Krishna, it was amazing. It just transformed my life. It transformed my chanting. So sometimes don't get disheartened if you don't see the results immediately. You know, just be patient. The longer Krishna makes you wait, the results are even more greater, you know. So don't give up. So keep trying, and I'm sure, you know, you will develop a personal relationship with him. And I personally, like, this was like Prema Tarangini Mataji kind of, it's so difficult to call her Prema Tarangini Mataji, you know, be formal, right? Yeah, we're such good friends. We call by name for each other, and now because we're doing this present, she's calling me Mataji, I'm calling her Mataji. I was telling her, even for this presentation, I'm pretty brain dead. Actually, the process, she helped me and she said, oh, this is a principle and this is a principle. And one thing she said, seems like your strength is you just take one principle and then you go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into that. And that's fantastic. She put it very beautifully, and I said, I never thought about it like that. But since she said it, and I think Krishna spoke through her, I think that's what it is. Sometimes we think that we have to have lots of experience and, you know, big experiences. No, we don't need much, you know. Even if there's one experience and you can just be focused on that one experience and go deeper and deeper, you will have your own, like, you know, deep realization and your convictions. We will become, like, strong. Am I missing anything else? I covered it up, right? Yeah. Let me look into my notes. Yeah. One last thing. Identify your strength in your Krishna consciousness. Pick one thing that you think is your strength and act from that position in your relationship with Nama Prabhu. Yolanda has a question mark on her face. We can talk about it in question answer session if that's not clear. So, I'm done with my presentation. Back to Prema Tarangini. Oh, you have to.
Thank you so much for sharing that, your personal story. It reminded me of a lot of personal stories with Holy Name for myself. And I was debating, should I go there? Should I do what I prepared for?
Go for it.
But I'll just say one thing, maybe one or two things. You know, she was speaking about how, she said it in her own way, but I'll say it in my own way, that each of us, I think there comes a time in our spiritual life where we're really kind of questioning, is Krishna really there? Like, because we practice things, but for really like Krishna to become very real, we go through this kind of period where we start questioning things at some level. And the one thing that really helps us go beyond any obstacle is actually the point she made about how Krishna is our best friend. Having faith in the principle that Krishna is our best friend. Even if you do not have any other friend, even if everything is upside down in your life, but if you have faith in this one principle that Krishna is my best friend, you can go through anything. And frankly speaking, this is at the core of our struggles. That not having faith that Krishna is always there for me is something that makes us, the manifestations of that, you know, not having that faith comes out in different ways. But at the core is this. And as she said, you know, once you invest, you know, in this relationship, everything else can be sorted out. So I was also thinking about several experiences. I remember it was back in 2005, I think, when I really started reflecting upon the quality of my chanting. I started my Krishna consciousness in 1998, so that was about 6-7 years after that. Then I was realizing, you know, like, because that was 2005 was the first time that they did a japa retreat for the leaders in California. And that was the time that I started reflecting on my own chanting. And then I realized that actually I don't really have a relationship with the Holy Name. And, you know, I chant every day as very dutifully, but I don't particularly have a relationship. And, you know, went through a number of struggles, my health included, and many different things. But for myself also, what has really turned my life around is when I have felt touched by, you know, Krishna's Holy Name or Srimad Bhagavatam. These are the two things I've taken shelter of. And of course, relationship with my spiritual master. These are the three, like, strengths, basically, that in any given situation, they always give some light. I remember I was in this 12-hour kirtan one time in Vrindavan, and there were lots of things that were not going well in my life. I was quite troubled. I literally went that time with a feeling that, Krishna, you know, I'm going to give it one last shot, literally, you know. I don't know what's going on, you know. I'm going to give it one last shot. You please show me in some way that you're really present, you know, in the Holy Name and the devotees and the Bhagavatam and so on. I was in this 12-hour kirtan really like chanting from my heart. It was at Krishna Kund in Vrindavan. And that was the first time ever. It was like an amazing experience where all this speech we hear about how the Holy Name is complete, you know, the Holy Name is everything, Hari Naam Eva Kevalam. It was the first time I had some realization about it. I felt so complete. Nothing had changed in my external life. But I felt so, so complete. And there was not a fraction of envy or negativity even towards one person. All I had is loving feelings. And this is something Prabhupada keeps talking about. You know, the platform of real unity. You know, it's only possible on this platform. It was really nice to, you know, experience that. And that really changed Well, even before that I had some experience. But anyway, that really changed my relationship with the Holy Name and how I looked at the Holy Name after that and tried to keep going deeper in it. Anyway, I could share so many stories. But I wanted to share a couple more tools that may really help you. And we can talk about stories during prasadam or something like that. I could share something about something. When I was chanting one time, 64 rounds at a stretch, one period of time. There was also a time when so much like unraveled, like about relationships for me. Krishna showed that every issue I had with any relationship, he was here. He was not there. He was here. And really transformed my relationships after that. And I just became secure and, you know, just not looking for something outside. I was talking about the victim mentality earlier and I realized how much I had that victim mentality or approval seeking mentality. And, oh, poor me, you know, and this person is doing that and that person is doing that. But Krishna really showed why he was doing all this. It was like 3 days non-stop. I was like in a pool of tears. Just Krishna was just unraveling things, you know. And it's really nice if we can take that full responsibility for wherever we are at. And that's one of the most difficult things to do. Because taking responsibility for whatever situation we are in means that sometimes our mind goes in the direction of feeling I'm very bad. And that's the main thing that stops us from taking that responsibility. And then feeling that not only I'm bad, but the others think that I'm bad, right? So, but if you can truly do that, you can become free. I often speak about this in different classes too. So, anyway, we have 20 minutes. Yeah, go ahead.
I forgot one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because you specifically told me, Himangi, make sure you don't forget this point. And I okay. said, that's why I was looking at my okay. notes and I said, oh, I forgot.
Okay.
When I shared with her during, you know, our discussion that I had gone for 6 weeks to, you know, Dham, she said, that's also a very important principle. On a regular basis, devotees should make time for themselves. You know, for themselves, all for themselves, not with the family. And if you can, without being distracted, that's good, but exclusive time to spend for your chanting and maybe even, you know, reading, supporting that with reading Bhagavatam for hours. So that exclusive time needs to be made. If you really want to make progress, you need to give time to this relationship too, like how you give importance to other relationships. So that's also a very important, actually, I don't know, tool or principle or whatever, like, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So one thing that Himangi Mataji said during her presentation was, take one thing. Everyone is smiling there because I said Himangi Mataji. But she said that take one principle, go deep in it, and do it for a long time. So I wanted to share one more thing. I actually had several things, but I don't think we're going to get through all that. But whatever matters to us, actually we count, right? This is something that matters a lot to most people. Somehow if you don't count money, it seems to somehow disappear from the whole of your pocket or something like that, right? So actually whatever matters to us, we count. And when we want, you know, really to see a change in something, we really value something, we're always very careful to do that in a very measured way. We measure every aspect of it and make sure that it's done precisely. Right, those of you who go to work, I quit work. But those of you who go to work, you're not careless about it. You actually make sure every little thing, there's, you know, you check and counter check and, you know, make sure everything is in the proper place before you submit, you know, your project, right? So there's also another saying that you are what you do every day, right? So sadhana is really about changing our nature, right? So what we do every day, that's what, you know, we really become. And that connects us to the definition of sadhana, and also the point that she was making earlier, that Maharaj had done this anatomy of anarthas last year in different places, and we heard there that the definition of sadhana according to the Yoga Sutras or Patanjali is that it must be done for a long time, and it must be done in an uninterrupted manner, and it should be done with some reverence or devotion. So if you actually take it that, you know, we're trying to change our nature. Right now our nature, we did a lot of turning our back on Krishna for millions of years, and so now we have a very conditioned nature. And but our true nature is, of course, being one of spirit soul, servant of Krishna. We're disconnected from that. We all know that all too well. So in order for something to really be sadhana, these three things must be there. If we don't do it for a prolonged period of time, or sometimes we do it nicely, but it's interrupted, or, you know, we do it very lackadaisically, you know, there is not reverence or devotion, then it's not actually going to produce any substantial effect. So the point I want to make really is, or the tool I want to give you, is that whatever matters to you, you count it and you measure it. You measure every aspect of it. There was one Russian scientist actually, who used to measure time. He used to write down in a little book everything that he did. He was accountable for like every minute of his life. Whatever he did, his whole day, he would write it down. I did this and I did that and I did. And he made sure that he did not waste a single minute. So imagine if we could do that, you know, and offer that to Krishna. It would be wonderful. So, and we know that even one moment wasted, we cannot get back with even heaps of, you know, gold coins. So our acharyas, Lord Chaitanya, everyone actually recommends that in our chanting also, we must count like this, and we must become very resolute in this manner. So Lord Chaitanya, you know, there were all these Bengali devotees, and he made them like his own relatives almost. And he gives them instructions about how to chant. And the first thing he says in regards to that is this verse in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. The Lord says, "This is the Maha Mantra. All of you go and chant this mantra according to a prescribed number." So you see, the number is very important. Yes, we are chanting 16 rounds. I'm not saying you are not chanting, but yet I want to make some particular point here. So chant a prescribed number. So there's this word nirbandha in the verse here. So this nirbandha actually means not only to just count, but it also means connection. It also means a resolute determination. This is something very important. Bhaktivinod Thakur, he writes Bhajan Rahasya. Yesterday Maharaj was mentioning about that. That Bhajan Rahasya is actually Bhaktivinod Thakur's secrets to entering Nama Bhajan. And he's essentially elaborating on the Shikshashtakam verses in different ways. And in the very first verse, when he's talking about Shikshashtaka, this is also something he quotes. He's referring to the same instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave. He, you know, he just words it differently. But here you see this word, Ganana Vidina. Ganana Vidina also means to count. And then he says, he quotes a verse from Naradiya Purana after that. And even in that, there's again this word, Nirbandini Mati. So the same, you know, counting, resolute determination, that connection. And he says, if you have this Nirbandha Mati, then Achirad Eva Sarvartha Siddhati Esham Abhipsita. So whatever perfection we desire, we'll very, very quickly achieve that. So this is, achirad means very quickly. And that's the translation of the verse. So whatever really matters to us, we must count. So what does it mean for us in our, you know, daily chanting? How to take this principle to a deeper level, actually, because this is something that matters to all of us the most. I mean, this is our whole, what's our whole movement is about, is this chanting. So if we want to be successful in our chanting, one of the things is to count. Count, 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 count every aspect of it. Meaning that you can take a little notebook, carry it with you at all times. You can start, those of you who are not yet chanting 16 rounds, first of all, you can just write down how many rounds you chanted each day. Right? Then you can write about by what time you finished chanting how many ever rounds. Right? And if you have to start writing 10:30 p.m. or 11 p.m., I finished my last round. Right? You'll feel a little bit guilty about it. And at least you'll try to make an improvement. And if you can write over there 6 a.m., you finish your 16 rounds, it's also a very rewarding feeling. It's very nice. But not only counting the number, but actually you can count like the qualitative aspects. You can measure every qualitative aspect. It's also like a managerial principle, right? Everybody talks about SMART goals nowadays. That whatever you want to achieve, like, you know, make it measurable, right? Set a SMART goal. So why shouldn't we set SMART goals for our chanting too? And this is also the recommendation of our acharyas. So, you know, I try to do that every month. I try to write down certain things that I want to work on, and I try to mark it, you know, each day. And so you can try. So you can try, also like we gave you this japa evaluation form, you can take items from that even. Okay, how many rounds did I chant without getting up? You know, how many rounds, you know, my mind was distracted? How many rounds I could really pay full attention? Okay, I want to really apply this tool in my chanting. How many rounds could I do that for? And you can do this counting not only for chanting, but also some of the other aspects of your devotional service. And it's a very, 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 very powerful method. And write it down. Don't try to do it in your mind. Writing is something very, very powerful. It makes an impression somehow on your heart. So, and it is, you know, some of us may say, oh, we're devotees and bhakti is all about, you know, just heart and feelings and that's all it is, right? But it's not just that. We want to measure even our sadhana very, very carefully. And Lord Chaitanya himself, for him, every name was, you know, ecstatic chanting. But yet he used to count his rounds. Our acharyas, they counted not only their rounds, but they counted their obeisances. Right? You know, Raghunath Das Goswami used to offer 2,000 obeisances every day. I didn't try to practice 2,000 obeisances, but I tried to, I said, let me start with 20 obeisances per day. So a period of time I was trying to do 20 obeisances per day, and I lost count even of 20 sometimes. So I was thinking, I don't know what kind of counter he had to count 2,000 obeisances every day. So actually our acharyas counted, you know, this appears also in our Sat Goswami Ashtaka. Sankhya Purvaka Nama Gana Nativi. So that is also counting, Sankhya Purvaka. So it's something very, it's a very easy principle. And something that will really do something for your chanting. It's very easily measurable. It's not like very difficult to follow or anything. And you can track your progress and you can make sure that you're making sufficient progress each month. I'm thinking where to go next. I have so many things here. Yeah, okay, she wants me to do So I'm going to reciprocate in my loving relationship with Himangi Mataji. She was inspired by this. So another concept or tool I want to present to you is the concept of dharana. It is not essentially like a bhakti thing that we hear usually. But this was an inspiration I had when I was studying second canto actually. But before we get into that, so according to the yoga shastras, the whole thing is about controlling the transformations of the mind. That's what Patanjali says. One of the first few sutras is yoga chitta vritti nirodha. That's stopping the movements of the mind, basically. And there are different transformations of consciousness that he describes. One is shipta, literally means spaced out. And that is the influence of tamas on our consciousness. Then there is muda. Muda means bewildered or stupefied or dull. Can we relate to that sometimes? Yeah. Then there's vikshepa or agitated, which is the influence of rajas. And then there's ekagra, or this is very focused and it's the sattva. And then finally there is niruddha, stopped or pacified. So of course these people, you know, they sometimes tend to focus just on even a material object and concentrate. But even one focuses on a material object and concentrates, Vyasadeva in his commentary, he describes actually that even this focusing on a material object, if you can get to ekagra, it gives so many like good results, wonderful results. One is that it slackens your karma, it relieves your suffering, and the truth is manifested, and it makes one inclined to spiritual things. It awakens somehow that attraction a little bit for spiritual things. There was a person who just became inclined to yoga, and he just started doing some meditation on a, you know, candle and whatever else they do. And just within a few months, all his bad habits started dropping one by one, you know. It's a very powerful principle if we can capture it. But of course, Vyasadeva also says that niruddha is not possible fully if the focus is only on a material object. So this also connects very much to the things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks, what really takes us away from chanting. He says audasinya, which is basically like shipta, spaced out or dull. And then jadya is like muda. Jadya, like you're just sleepy during chanting like that. And vikshepa is like distraction. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also speaks about these things. So basically you can see what is it that really takes our mind here and there. It's the influence of the modes. And I was kind of struck when I was reading the second canto in the first chapter. Here Sukadev Goswami is describing how to meditate on the Virat Roop. And as he's describing this, he describes the yam and niyam and asana, pratyahara, pranayama, all those processes. And then he gets to dharana. I'm not going to go into all those details because I don't want to do a Bhagavatam class again. But then this verse comes, and this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's translation. Prabhupada also talks about it, but I like the language of this because it just makes it very like clear. So he says, the wise man controls the mind agitated by rajas and bewildered by tamas by practice of dharana, which destroys the impurity produced by rajas and tamas. So what Sukadeva Goswami is saying is that this influence of rajas and tamas can be very easily removed. These impurities caused by influence of rajas, tamas can be very easily removed by the process of dharana. And I don't know how many of you know, but dharana is actually like a generalized meditation sort of, and it's not even too specific, but it's 12 seconds. It's fixing our mind on something for 12 seconds. This is the dharana period. And then of course dhyana is 12 times dharana, which is 2 minutes 24 seconds, and samadhi is 28.8 minutes. So I was thinking 12 seconds, that's approximately 3 to 4 mantras. So if we can actually try to practice keeping this complete focus on even 4 mantras in a row, which is hopefully the mind won't rebel. Sometimes when you say 16 rounds, the mind says, no, you know, no way. But if you tell it 4 mantras, please, just 4 mantras, you know, let's try. It may cooperate. And you may be amazed that just doing these 4 mantras at a time, very quickly, we can become cleansed of these impurities of rajas and tamas upon us. So I like to practice this sometimes, and it's nice, you know. I like using different tools. And that's another thing I wanted to share, that all of you, if you can take a little time and make a long list of all the different tools in chanting that you've heard over the years, that you've used over the years, you know, even sometimes you're reading and you feel some inspiration, you know, in your chanting, just list them all down. And you can have them handy, like your toolbox, right? Of course, toolbox in and of itself is not everything. Ultimately, it's bhakti. But, you know, like I was saying, our hearts are quite broken right now. And we don't have, like, really bhakti overflowing from our heart. So we need a crutch. When something is broken, you know, we need a crutch to hang on to for some time. And then we may gain some strength, and you can throw away the crutch after that. So I like to use these tools really like a crutch. You know, we don't have bhakti overflowing, but these things can really help assist in our chanting, to bring some feelings, to bring some, you know, focus in our chanting. So you can have those different tools ready, and then you can use different things at different times according to your inspiration. And I'll just maybe end with this, that the main thing is to somehow or the other really hear the holy name. I mean, we keep listening mechanically, but listening mechanically really happens on the platform of false ego. And there's a lot of effort we have to put when we are trying to do something mechanically. But somehow, if you can really take out time periodically, some sannyasis say, you know, sometimes you should just try chanting for 24 hours at a stretch. Maybe we can't do 24, at least we can try 18 hours. You know, sleep 6 hours. And we can try 18 hours. And just do it, whether there's quality, no quality, use different tools, stay with it, just keep doing it. And something will happen. Definitely you will hear the holy name at least once. And when I say hear, this is beyond the platform of false ego. And that hearing is at really at the seat of consciousness. And once you hear, even once, you know, that impression, because this is the touch of Krishna's internal energy, when you really hear the holy name, and that taste you can never forget. You can never forget. I'm sure we've all had times when we really heard. Okay, we're trying to listen. But at some point you feel like, huh, now I can hear. Wow, this is what hearing the holy name really means, you know. Murijan Prabhu, he says that after chanting for like 25 years or something, he suddenly realized, wow, this is what hearing means. Of course, he was speaking out of humility, I take it. But, you know, in my case, it's true. So somehow hear, and try to also take this principle of how Krishna is non-different from the holy name. Try to remember this all the time, because if we can come to that point, that is really like a beginning point of our meeting with Krishna in our relationship with the holy name and relationship with Krishna, that Krishna is non-different from his name. And this can happen at the stage of you know, Shraddha and Anartha Nivritti and so on. And of course, at Nishta, when one really reaches Nishta, one not only hears, but one sees. And then at the stage of Ruchi, one sees, one hears, and one starts seeing the qualities of Krishna. The qualities become manifest. And then at the stage of Ashakti, you're hearing, you're seeing, and you're also seeing the Leela of Krishna. And at Bhava, you see your role in the Leela. And at Prema, you enter the Leela. So we're far away. We have some ways to go. So therefore, at least we can start with counting and measuring every aspect of our chanting and understand that we don't want to stay in this platform forever, you know, just struggling with our chanting. We want to move. There's some ways to go for us, right? So we'll stop there. I know we're already beyond time, but we can take questions for maybe 10 minutes. Yeah.
Till the curtains close.
Yeah.
Here.
Thank you, Mataji. I have multiple questions, but I'll take only one. My question was taking shelter. Three modes acting, you know, different times, differently in the whole day. What are the practical ways or tips or some where we could take shelter when the mode of ignorance or passion is predominant? And like, you know, at that time, okay, I will go read Bhagavatam or pick up the bead, it doesn't work that way, you know, slowly, you know. So what are the practical ways?
Okay, Himangi Mataji, would you like to answer that? She's in the conversation. Okay. Well, I thought that's what we were trying to do here, give you some practical tools here. because, yeah, it's not spontaneous at our level. That's why I said make a long list of tools. And you can have a friend. One friend you can have in your life that if her mind is also saying, I do not want to pick up even one tool. Sometimes the mind says that. Okay, yeah, I know. Because the real thing is we are attached to that suffering. That's what it is. We are in that poor me consciousness kind of, oh so much suffering, and then the mind will say, yeah, you know, and this person did that and that person, how could they do this and I should have done this, and it will run the story again and again and again. And all it does when the mind says that is that you're a victim. And we don't want to get out of that victim mentality because there is some enjoyment in that. What's the enjoyment? I'm in the center. It's me. Although it looks like poor me, but it's still me. There is no Krishna in there, you know. So therefore, even we have a long list of tools, you know, the mind doesn't want to pick up even one tool. Because the tool is about connection with Krishna. The tool is not just about me in one sense. The false me that we think about anyway. Yes, it is about the real me, but we're not ready to take that. So it's nice to have a friend sometimes, at least one person, one relationship where we can fully trust and share. And you can say, you know, wait, you know, I don't want to pick up even one tool today. My mind is super rebellious. So maybe the friend can take one tool and just hammer on her head then. Or sometimes, you know, the friend may be very loving also. But we should give that license to our friends to sometimes hammer on our heads, right? It's nice to have such friends. So anyway, that's my answer. You want to add anything? Yeah. Okay. Rati Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Mataji. I think it was a very Inspiring and amazing presentation. Thank you both.
Inspiring because you were there.
No.
We all started our journey together. Yeah. These are old friends.
Yes.
We lived next to each other. We grew up together in our Krishna consciousness. It's nice to have you.
Thank you. I think I was a little late for the presentation, so I didn't really catch the first part of it. But I was really inspired by Himangi Mataji's speaking from her heart. And one of the points that kind of struck me was, and I think I also shared this with Prema Tarangini Mataji yesterday, there is this desire always that, and I want to do this, I really want to do it. As you are sharing, Mataji, Himangi Mataji, that, okay, I just want to get out of a place and sit in Vrindavan, chant few rounds, and I want to chant them as my best rounds as possible. That desire is always there within me. But when it comes to the point of, I wouldn't say implementing it, but really, trying my best to get the desire fulfilled, there is always, I find that there is some gap, or there is something that I'm missing. So that's one part to you, Himangi Mataji. And then I think I would really, Prema Tarangini Mataji, the last thing that you told about Dharana, that's just really amazing. It just kind of touched my heart right away. Because if I were to just focus on 3-4 mantras at a time, which I think, at least I feel that is doable, then focusing on the 16 rounds and into it times 108. That's like a small, as Maharaj always says, take small steps and but firm steps.
Yeah.
Kind of amplifies that point here by doing like 3-4 mantras. This is something that I would definitely, I'm very inspired to actually implement and try my best to get this. So the question back to Himangi Mataji was, having the desire is one thing, and then diligently working and conscientiously taking the steps towards fulfilling those desires is another step. And the tools that Mataji have shared, I'm sure, will definitely help in getting there. But I just want to hear some more on both of your experiences and how do you do it, or how do you get there.
Sometimes, life doesn't give us the opportunity to take off like that for a long period of time. Especially if, you have work. And then you can take 4 weeks off, but then that takes away your time from your family, your annual break with your family, which is also important. So, one of the practical solution is that on a regular basis, you need to let your family know and you just take a day off from your family. Which means that you either go to the temple early morning and you just tell your family you won't see me till whatever time. And just close your eyes and just be in the temple room and you chant and nobody will really disturb you. Don't do it on a Sunday. Sunday temples are too crowded. Saturday. Something like that. Or maybe take a day off from work on a working day. Something like that. Not many people can take this drastic step of going to a dham and spending an extended period of time. But even that one day on a regular basis, once in 3 months, trying to focus like that. Or if you can do it at home, your kids are grown up now, they're mature, they understand. You just lock yourself in your room and tell your wife and your children that, dad is not available, And just be in your room and just read and chant and the desire will become, just experiencing, going through that experience will, strengthen the desire to go more further and further into that. The other thing is, for me, it almost came as if my Krishna consciousness was threatened. It was almost suicidal. And I went in my mind to that whole experience that if I leave, not that I didn't want to leave the process. I wanted to leave the circumstances, the situation I was in. But
just the thought, I did entertain the thought that what if I'm not in a devotee community, but, you know, so I may go back to India and be with my old friends and my family. And I entertained the thought and it was scary. Because I knew that after some time, I won't be able to sustain my Krishna consciousness. So whatever it is, I stay with Prabhupada, because when you take initiation, you make a commitment that you stay with ISKCON, you stay with Prabhupada. And believe me, when you consciously make that step towards Prabhupada, like in your relationship with Prabhupada, Prabhupada is a very loving grandfather. He just reciprocates. He understands our struggle. He understands where we are. And one of my favorite things, and I share with all the devotees who serve in this temple, I regularly tell them, you know, the best part of this temple is 1 to 4 when the deities are resting in the afternoon. And usually there's nobody in this room. It's quiet. And you come and, you know, stand in front of Prabhupada or sit in front of him. Open your heart. Believe me, Prabhupada is there. He will listen. So you have to make that connection from your heart for the desire to become stronger. And it's, our desire is there, but again, the mercy has to come our way for that to manifest. So you have to beg. You have to show to, you know, Prabhupada and to Krishna that you really want this. You really want this relationship. Like, it's like falling in love with in a mundane relationship, you know. Mine is a love marriage, so I know, you know, when I wanted that relationship, I went all out, you know, I went against whoever said no, and I said, I don't care, I want this relationship. So it's the same way, you know, mine will say this, circumstances are this way, but then you have to desire that, you know what, I want to fall in love in that way with Krishna. I don't know. I just shared.
Okay. I had maybe one thought to add to that, although you didn't address the question to me. Okay. I'm taking the opportunity anyway. So I just wanted to say that, you know, even you can't take off for a long time, but even once a year, even for a short time, when you go to the dham, try to chant deeply when you're there. And capture those moments, not just your own experience, but capture the surroundings, capture the place, take snapshots, not on your camera, but really in your heart. And when you come back, in the early morning hours, you can always go to those places in your mind. You can be mentally doing Govardhan Parikram, mentally sitting in front of Rupa Goswami's Samadhi and chanting your rounds. You can be sitting at Sanatan Goswami's Samadhi. You can be, you know, at Ther Kadamba. You can be sitting and chanting your rounds. Such a beautiful place. So it's easy to do that in the early morning hours. You know, I like to go to Govardhan often. You know, it's so nice, you know. So you can easily do that.
What? It's interesting that those are the same meditation I had recently shared with the devotees. So.
Oh, okay. We're connected here, see? So you can easily go to these places in the early morning hours and, yeah, just take a day off, half day off from the family, like she said, and just do it. And sometimes you can also do it amongst like our peer group. Just get together as a peer group. Just come together and chant one day, like 64 rounds or how many ever rounds. Just sit and chant. Nothing else to do. Just sit and chant that day. It's very strengthening. Okay.
You know, you have a taste. You are a singer. You know, you have a taste for the holy name. It's not that you don't have. So the point that I was making, take your strength and go deeper. Maybe you can use that principle. And just do it quite just personal thing, not for others or for anything. And that will give you strength with your chanting. Japa. If somebody wants to leave, they're hungry, you're free to leave. Okay? Don't feel obliged. Oh, okay, yeah, you need to.
Thank you so much, Mataji, for the nice presentation. Regarding that lotus feet and the symbols on that, on the same as the other Prabhu was asking, sometime before I tried to meditate on what my mind is meditating while chanting, I made a notebook and then I saw in 1 minute of my chanting, I wrote 25 different transactions. Okay, so it was very terrible. Okay, now, while hearing this, what I see is, instead of going to that unlimited 25 things, I make my mind refer, hey, hang on with these few signs. Okay, so now first thing is, when I try to connect to these signs, for example, thunderbolt is there, oh, this is doing something like this, these thoughts are coming, but our japa is not for thinking, but for hearing, and I'm coming to the same point that I don't know after experiencing how it will be, but mind, if I'm trying, it will anyways go roam around, and I'm trying to make it run around only these things, you know, hey, lotus feet is here, and these are the signs, and this is the problem, connect with this, I don't have a job, I don't have this, connect it. But where is hearing happening, you know, I am not finding it that easy. Instead of that, something else is happening. Please okay. Help, Mataji.
So, I'll say a few things. First of all, every tool may not work for everyone. But one thing is, even if, like, the mind may go to different places, and it, like you're saying, it goes anyway. The whole thing is to not make it go anyway, but to bring it back. But instead of going anywhere, at least there is an anchor here. You know, this can help us in our relationship with Krishna, in our chanting. There is a clear sense of focus to come back to. That's how really any tool really helps. Like I said, it's a crutch. You know, as long as you hold on the crutch, you can walk. And once you go deeper in your chanting, you actually get to the platform of hearing. You're with the holy name. You don't need to hold on to that. Or you can, even if you're doing it, it's really like a matter of the heart. You know, the example I gave to you, right? You asked the question. So it does not distract you from hearing the holy name. The whole purpose of this to not take you away from the hearing, but rather to assist you. You know, so where does the mind go? So that's what I asked you to list. What are some themes? You know, I'm not saying the exercise should be that when you sit down to chant, think of all your problems in life and think which sign to connect to. It's not match the columns or something like that, you know. That's not what we're trying to do. That's not the exercise. We're not saying bring all the problems that you have and try to match the signs. No. But at a particular moment when you're chanting, maybe the mind is going somewhere. Maybe you're troubled with some particular emotion, some feeling, whatever. You can take it to Krishna and take shelter there. And that's what I said. There is a need. And all the needs, you know, can be met with the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So you can bring it, you know, to the holy name. If it doesn't work for you, don't do it. That's fine. But you can practice it. And you may find that it will really help you. Really help you. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaji. One of the points in the evaluation chart was how often do we read the glories of the holy name? So question to either of you is, can you recommend some scriptural references where we can read the glories of the holy name?
My answer is very short. I usually I like to read Padyavali.
It's a compilation of, there are many verses that's glorifying the holy name, and I really like Rupa Goswami. And that then I take shelter of Shikshashtaka. I'm the one principle, one thing kind of a person, so I don't have. And the other is Burijana Prabhu's, you know, Japa book, you know, with the calendar, you know, you've got this green color. You've seen that? No? It's in the gift shop? I think you should buy that, you know, because they're really nice. She's marketing. So, these are my three sources of inspiration. That's it.
Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that you should regularly read something about Nama Tattva, because to keep our, you know, heart, our mind very alive, like I want to keep that enthusiasm really. So if you regularly read, then it'll help in our chanting. And there are so many books on chanting, so many books. I can give you a list, but you can read. I would just say even read 5 minutes before chanting. Just 5 minutes. You don't need to read long time. Take one principle and just apply it. If after 8 rounds you feel like mind is again somewhere, you can read again a little bit for 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Just one page is enough to capture the mind, to just bring it back to focus. There's many. There's Sachinandan Maharaj's book, Nectarian Mellows of the Holy Name, Nama Rahasya, Broken Names. There is the Japa book, there is Japa Meditation, Japa Walk, Japa Talk, Art of Chanting Hare Krishna. There's so many books. And when you read Bhagavatam every day, when you read any Prabhupada's books every day, it will inspire you in your chanting. The conclusion of Bhagavatam is actually Nama Sankirtan. And that conclusion you will find, that inspiration you'll find just when you read Bhagavatam every day. It'll help you in your chanting without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Satisfied? Last question.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mataji. Both Himangi Mataji, we know her very well. She's always opens her heart and talks even while chastising us. Yeah, so.
Man, don't
And thank you, Mataji. I really like whatever matters counted. Now, this is again going back to that maintaining a journal, in which Guru Maharaj also talks about it. And also, I see in my journey, I think one thing Maharaj has recommended in his classes is gratitude journal. We receive so much of blessings. So, against all what we receive, our troubles are quite limited if we even shortlist what we receive every day. So that's one. The other one is, again, this is coming from the training I'm receiving from my mentor, Jagdananda Prabhu. So it's about the positive way of thinking. And I see in Japa book, also Gurujan Prabhu says the mind has a tendency to only, even when you're chanting, suddenly it will bring up some problem. So that's the lamentation aspect. And also we all are aware, behavioral scientists talk about shame. There's a tendency, you know, when we are trying to step into a positive way of life, the lamentation aspect of it really pulls us back. So Burijan Prabhu puts it so well, even if you've done 15 rounds of chanting which is unattentive, just don't bother, you know, focus at one mantra. And he says, even if you chanted one mantra attentively, just tap your back. He says something similar, you know, say, oh, you made a progress. So a very positive enforcement is needed. The fitness of multiple. I just wanted some thoughts on your end. There's a tendency many times when we read, our mind goes on our weaknesses rather than what we can do better. So I just wanted to get that thought. And that's helping me through a bit to be more positive rather than just being hidden in shame. Thank you.
It's a comment, right? Clarification. You want to say something?
No. I think you said it wonderfully.
Yeah.
I think it's a very nice point. So, thank you for sharing that. It's true, positive reinforcement should be there instead of negatively or lamenting. See, I can even say nice things.
Right, Anandalila?
No, I have a nice relationship with him.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.